The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
5 on 5 on Ray D'Arcy.ie. I really enjoy our Friday shows because we get a chance to sit somebody down and get them to trace back their whole life through sounds. and today's guest is Nevin Maguire. How are you doing, Nevin?
Good to see you. How are you? Happy New Year to you and all the team.
Yeah, the Gallaghers want to know who's cooking the dinner tonight.
I know.
In house.
I will be back, but we have a great team. Carmen and the team is there. We have 12 chefs in the kitchen, so they'll be listening to me, but it's all about the team, isn't it, Ray?
What's the distance now? What's the time? How long does it take you to back up to?
Oh, from now, probably with traffic, I'll probably get there about 6:30.
6:30,
I'd say.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. 2.5 hours.
So it sounds a bit like this is your life as well, Nevin. So you were born in 1973.
Yes.
You're a twin, but you came out first. Your twin brother is David.
I'm an hour older. I'm proud
an hour
of that.
Older, yeah, right? Yeah. You were born to Joe and Vera. And you're from a family of 9.
Yeah, 5 boys, 4 girls.
And you're in the middle.
Yeah,
smack in the middle.
Exactly. Yeah, there's 4 girls and 5 boys and very close family. You know, David is my twin, obviously, and my oldest brother, Kenneth. Then you have Sharon, Sonia, Naomi, Suzanne, Alan, Carlos. Carlos lives in Australia and the rest of them live all in, over Ireland, from Galway to Donegal.
RTE News on Lyric FM.
There's Eileen Dunn reading the news on Lyric FM. So will you be 45 this year or are you
45 next year?
45 next
year? 44, so I am.
You're 44, but you're 45 this year.
Yeah, this year.
We're in the new year. Right, okay. So your first memory as a child, it doesn't have to be related to a sound, just your first memory.
I suppose, you know, growing up, it was all about food and, you know, cooking with my mother and bacon with my mother, flapjacks, shortbread, the love of food, because that's where we got it all from, a family of 9. You know, Mum had the restaurant, like we closed, so we did for many, many years. Like Mum and Dad bought the building in 1965 and then we closed from 1973 to 1989. Now, people wouldn't realise this, like Black Lyons is a small little village, but it went through some tough times with the Troubles.
Yeah, just give it geographically where Black Lyon is, because it's right smack on the border.
Yeah, it is. It's literally 2 minutes from Belcoo, which is in County Fermanagh, 15 minutes from Inniskillen. So people think, oh, Dublin, he's in Cavan. We're an hour from Cavan, and about 2 hours and a bit from Dublin.
So when you get to Cavan, you've still a good bit to go.
Yeah, you do. You have another hour.
And I even saw, I think, Tommy Gorman doing a report on Brexit, and he was standing, there's a bridge, is there, in Black Lyon? And that's on the border.
Yeah, and I mean, like, half it's in Fermanagh, half it's in Cavan. And I mean, like, you know, we're a very close community because a lot of my staff are from Fermanagh and the surrounding area. Yeah. So, yeah, it's like a small community. There's about 300 people living in Black Lyon, maybe the same again in Belcoo. It's very small.
So we launched straight into it because you mentioned there that it was closed for a number of years, and the reason for that was the Troubles.
Yeah, like in 73, like when I was only very young, born and all the rest, like the front of our house was bombed. It was the UVF, like we put a car outside the restaurant in front of the Garda station and kind of destroyed the whole front of our restaurant. So, you know, I think back to the Troubles, you know, there were tough times, like, you know, for Mum and Dad, like what, there should be pictures, the whole place kind of destroyed in that. And then Mum and Dad decided that they would close and then reopen in 1989 when I was taking an interest. But for those years...
And what did they do in the intervening years then?
So what they did, so Mum ran a bed and breakfast, so she would have kept a lot of the guards. In Black Lyon, there was 59 guards at that time. On Border Patrol, there was some army there, soldiers, and then there would have been customs. So she would have done B&B and done private catering.
So there was a little industry around that.
Absolutely. She had to, because, I mean, like, she would have done catering in the kind of, like, up in the golf club and dinner dances, different things like that. So she cooking was her life. That's what she did. As well as rearing a family, she had to make the bills.
And were you aware, as a young boy growing up on the border, of what was going on just a few miles north of you? Yeah,
very much so. You know, you go into Inniskillen and then, you know, they kind of shut up the town, I think it's 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the evening. I have vague memories of that, you know, going up to the north was quite intimidating. Like, when we lived right on the border, you kind of got used to it. Mm. Inniskillen was my local town. That's where I used to go out. We used to shop, all socialise, that kind of thing. And, you know, there were tough times. I probably wouldn't remember it as much as obviously Mum and Dad when they closed. Like, they were really, really difficult times. People didn't want to come near the kind of border. So, you know, when we decided...
Apart from that, you seem to have an idyllic childhood. You were very much out in the country.
Oh, I loved
it. And this is a sound you remember.
Cuckoo.
That wasn't the clock.
Oh, my God.
It was
it really was.
Yeah,
and, I mean, it's a sound you don't hear as often as you used to. I remember going up to Save Turf when the restaurant was closed. Myself, my twin, my dad used to go up. We'd have ham sandwich, the usual, just up on Marylebank, which is about 10 minutes away from the restaurant. But you'd hear that. It was so kind of surreal and quiet up there. It's kind of a bit eerie sometimes in the bog because it's so quiet. But that's a sound that would make you remember. Wow, to hear it now, it's just lovely.
Yeah.
So it is. It's nature at its best.
Is there a hill out the back?
There is.
Back line?
Well, you have Kilka.
Right.
Mountain just up the road, about 5-10 minutes from Black Lion. And then where we live, like, there's just kind of like a loop just up behind the restaurants there is.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So a big family, noisy house?
Always. You know, you're from a big family.
Yeah.
You know, close family. And, you know, you'd have your fallouts, you'd fight like cats, but really, really good fun, good banter. Everyone kind of worked in the restaurant over the years. And for me, it was all about, I suppose, you know, enjoying it, enjoying the time, enjoying the freedom. Like me and David as twins, you know, we used to go and build three huts. We thought we were kind of Robin Hood, to be honest with you. You know, we grew up with that. And it was one of our favourite programmes when we grew up. And there was a closeness there with David. And funny enough, as we've got older, we've even got closer, to be honest with you.
And you're not identical?
No, not at all.
No. Not at all. You're quite definite there about that. What were the differences? What were the obvious differences
in between
the two?
Looks,
no, but not look, but in just in personality types.
It's very interesting. He was very disciplined. He'd fold his clothes perfectly in his room. I'd scatter them all over the place, to be honest with you.
And did you share a room?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We would. And, you know, I suppose David, I knew from a young age, chefing was for me, cooking was for me. I just connected with food for a funny reason. David, maybe he wasn't the most adventurous when it came to eating. He still doesn't like eggs, like I could live in eggs, you know.
And how can you not like eggs? What is there not to like about eggs?
He never. It must have been as a child, as when he was young, he didn't like the texture or whatever like that. Like I give Conor and Lucia eggs nearly most days and they love them. The most versatile ingredient. I remember being in your show once and you asked me, what's the one ingredient you couldn't live without? Eggs.
Eggs.
And you're right. You're absolutely right. So me and David, I suppose, we played together, played football. David played in goals. I played kind of outfield. We played for local team, Sean and Gales.
And did you support the same team?
Oh, no. That's a good one. So I have I have three younger brothers who and David, because I'm an hour older, remember that?
Yes.
And that support Liverpool. I loved Man United from day one. When Ron Atkinson was their manager, when they were struggling, then they won the FA Cup and Alex Ferguson, and I just loved them, so I did. I took to football, I took to soccer, and
great
for me, Man United. Yeah, loved them. And you know, I've been over to Old Trafford a few times, and it's just magical. I've just, even in the bad years, people think, oh, you just supported them since they've done well. I've always admired them. I just thought they had some amazing players over the years.
Just which of your siblings does this remind you of?
My oldest brother, Kenneth. You know, he used to play the drums, and when the restaurant was closed up at the top of the attic, he had a drum kit and used to play for a band in Pandoran called Boxty. Kenneth was a really, really good he was a really good drummer, but he was as wild as a March hare, and maybe that was his way that he kind of de-stressed or whatever. So that's what I remember, the drums from Kenneth. He used to be all into AC/DC, Iron Maiden, all that kind of thing. And I suppose I'm about very much a mixed bag when it comes to music. I like dance, I like kind of chill out music, you know, but he that's what he done. He played the drums and drove mum and dad mad, but he was very, very good at it, to be honest with you.
You mentioned that you're a big fan of Robin Hood on the telly. What else, what other TV memories have you got from your
growing up?
The A-Team.
Love the A-Team, I suppose. Because Saturday evening when the restaurant was closed, we kind of go out and play it, go in and watch it. It could be Robin Hood, the A-Team, Knight Rider, you know, the car that could talk. Could you imagine that?
Yeah.
And it was just, good times,
And was that, I don't know, it was in our house where you'd have a bath on a Saturday. You get into your pyjamas. If it was the summer, you were allowed to go out and play in your pyjamas outside, which is a big treat for some reason. And then back in.
That's it.
And watch the telly.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
go.
Isn't that brilliant to hear it again? I haven't heard that in years. You know, you think of Mr. T, you know, and a Snickers ads and different things like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that we watched a lot of TV, but they're kind of things that I remembered. And like me and David, like we were chatting during the week, you know, when some of your team were ringing me and asking questions. And I really had to think long and hard, to be honest with you. But, you know, it brings back a lot of great memories.
Yeah, because Colonel John Hannibal Smith, he was the boss man.
That's right.
Yeah, and then you'd Face, who was Templeton Peck, and then Howling Mad Murdoch.
Oh, he was Murdoch, crazy. Was brilliant.
B.A., what did B.A. stand for?
Mr. T.
Mr. T was, yeah. Mr. T. B.A., I never knew this. Bad Attitude.
Oh,
Bad Attitude.
Didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Mr. T, yeah. And Knight Rider as well, you're a big fan of that. Of course, that was David Hasselhoff. Was in that something else? So TV was there any? You didn't watch children's TV at all. You've no memories of
Sesame Street.
Yeah.
So was the Mad Chef. You think of Oscar. Remember the guy in the trash can?
Yes. Yeah.
The crazy guy and the chef that was throwing the chickens over his shoulders and cutting them and chopping them and all that. Sesame Street would have been a big one in our house. So,
so you, in your teenage years, then you got. I've spoken to you so many times over the years, but I never knew you were quite ill in your teenage years.
Yeah, I was actually got ill and I had to repeat a year in school and I spent a few months in Crumlin Hospital, to be honest, which I had problems with my liver and I had jaundice and I just wasn't well and probably never got to the root of it. But, you know, it really kind of, suppose, refocused what I was doing. I was kind of, wasn't really very good at school, to be honest with you. And then having a year back and your twin going forward and it was a kind of like a really sad time in my life and a time that I suppose it made you think, you know, OK, your health get better. You know, I miss playing football. I missed it. My family used to come up every Sunday to see me in Crumlin.
And how long were you in there
for? It was a long time, nearly for about maybe two, over 2 months. So it was a long time to be in Crumlin.
It is, at 13.
Yeah, 13.
And you're sort of at the upper limit of a children's hospital, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, and they were so good in Crumlin, I have to say. And I saw a lot of very, you know, very, very sick children there, like compared to what I was. And I used to go to school there, you know, they bought me into school, you know, to keep up to kind of a date and different things like that. But I kind of like was separated in a separate room when I had jaundice, and it was just.
And they never got to the bottom of
it. No, and it was just a difficult time. And I remember my mother and father, they'd always used to bring me Kinder eggs. So they'd bring me loads of Kinder eggs, and I'd nearly every single one of the little, you know, the little kind of pre-tips inside.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were tough times. And then I got out of it. Took me a little while to get better. I had to repeat a year. Probably the best thing ever happened in my life, to be honest with you, because I totally refocused. I got focused. I said, OK, listen, I really want to start to study in school and just enjoy. I was the first boy in my school in Manor Hamilton, St. Clair's Comprehensive, to do home economics. And I got
how
a bit of slack.
That now?
That was, for me, home economics, and I say it to
but
this
like,
day.
But that's a big thing.
Of course it is.
That's a big thing.
It's a huge thing. And I got dare I say it, like it's
not, you're not going out to defend your country, you know, against guns and bombs and all this thing. But it is a brave thing for a teenage boy to do.
And for me, I knew I wanted to do cooking. I wasn't very good at the sewing or anything like that. But the home economics teacher, Mairead McMorrow was her name, she took me under her wing and she saw, listen, this, he's a real interest. And you got a bit of picking and slagging and all the rest, but I think for me, home economics is the greatest. I think it's one of the unsung heroes of the
curriculum.
To be honest with you, every young person should be able to cook. I'm proud I did it, and it was. If people used to write. I remember they used to call me sissy and different things like that in the school. That didn't bother me because I enjoyed it, and I was cooking there, and it was great fun, and I was learning all the time. I was like a sponge.
Because for another person, you know, that sissy and all that could be seen as bullying, and it would affect them very negatively.
Absolutely.
Would you?
Oh, I was more determined
water off
than ever.
Looks back.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, like at that time, probably cooking was seen, oh, you know, you're a bit of a sissy doing the home economics, that kind of thing. But nowadays, you're like, more and more people have taken it up, which is fantastic. So my twin brother would have done woodwork. And then he went on to Limerick. He went to university there. And now he's a woodwork teacher.
Uh-huh.
So he knew exactly the
what
path,
he was doing.
Exactly what he was doing.
And because you were very close growing up. And then when you had to go back into school and he was in the year ahead of you, was that?
Well, it's ironic because my first cousin, Sinead Maguire, I was in her class and she really helped me and my family, and I missed my twin for sure. And it really, and I was really poor at kind of maths, Irish. I struggled with Irish, to be truthful with you, but I loved geography. I really liked English. And I kind of proved, you know, I proved myself and I proved to my family that I'd done really well in my junior cert. I didn't do my leaving cert, by the way. I knew after doing my junior cert, I want to go to college. I want to be a chef.
Right.
And I knew that from the age of a very young age, 13, 14, what was it, 15, 16, that was for me. Cooking was for me.
And you didn't even need a Leaving Cert to do the catering college, did you?
Yes and no. Right. You know, because
you got in anyway.
Yeah, and I would have applied to Killybegs, and I remember I wasn't accepted. And I always share this with young people, because life is like a roller coaster. You have knocks, but follow your heart, follow your dreams. Mm. I went into Fermanagh College. There was a lady there, Marion Campbell. She was the head of the department. And I rang her up and I said, you know, would there be any chance of getting a position in the college? And she said, absolutely no problem. So fate's an amazing thing. And I always share that with people. Follow your heart. And
you made that call yourself. Notes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just back to you're in hospital in Our Lady's Hospital, Crumlin, because what you were listening to on your Walkman was this.
Not only that song, Tina Turner. Brilliant.
Yeah.
I loved her.
Yeah.
Loved her. Queen, We Will Rock You. A lot of different Bruce Springsteen. A lot, and she's an amazing artist, and just connected. And it was on a little cassette. I remember it was a small little, when I couldn't sleep at night, I had the headphones on and I'd listen to her. You know the wee tiny mini cassettes?
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know, my brother would have recorded, my brother Kenneth would have recorded it for me and that. And to this day, I still think she's
great
awesome.
Song.
Absolutely
great
brilliant.
Song. Now, as you got a bit older, then you appreciated comedy. And I'd say you share your love for Only Fools and Horses with an awful lot of people.
Ah, yeah. It's a classic. Like, I remember every night, like, when the restaurant was kind of quiet, we finished early, I used to go in, sit down and watch Only Fools and Horses with some of the chefs and my mom and the family. I'd have a cup of tea, empty a bag of Maltesers into it that all float on top, and I'd eat away at them, watch Only Fools and Horses. I love Del Boy. To this day, I still do.
Okay, go back to that recipe. Go back, rewind to that recipe.
It's a recipe, won't be going in my cookbook, I can promise
so
you.
So it's a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And you just empty a packet of Maltesers. They melt, obviously.
Of course they do, and that's the whole idea. And they were soft and they were delicious and they make a mess.
And of course the tea is chocolate infused.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they say.
I love with malt. That's the secret.
With malt.
But I've moved on a bit from them now.
And what Who was your favourite character?
It has to be Del Boy. There's no one like him. I think the comedy, just to this day, like, I watched it even at Christmas when we were close, myself and Imelda. Yeah, I suppose all of us want to be like Del Boy. There's good nature, there's humour, there's a bit of trickiness there, and a bit of banter. And wasn't it great? You know, when you think of it, to this day, it's still
it stands the test of time. So this is Del Boy having a chat with Rodney about the new love in his life.
Okay. So you got a bird, have you? Oh, well, that explains it.
Explains what?
It explains why you've been lolliping about so much for the last week or so. You're going to pull your socks up, my son. It's beginning to affect business.
How can it affect business?
I'll tell you, shall I? Look. Tartan here called Irene McKay, right? She's had 17 quid's worth of clothes off you, and you're letting her pay you back at 25 pence a week, right? That means you've got to go around there every week for a year.
Yeah, I know.
I remember that one. I have every one of the DVDs. Glenn, you know, who worked with me, my head chef, and he got me the whole collection. And even like when you watch Sky Gold, like I still love everyone. I remember that one. They were selling these long kind of coats that there were, and
David Jason, brilliant,
loved it, brilliant, genius.
Here's the thing that I didn't know about you. Maybe I think you did mention to me before, but I'd forgotten that you were a DJ.
Yeah, mixed bag.
It sort of makes sense as well, because there's a bit of a performer in you. Isn't there? There is a bit. Like,
but I never.
And you have to be a bit of a performer in doing what you do.
It is all about, I suppose, the performance. For me, it was about the music, the buzz. And I suppose in the kitchen, dance music, you'd get the adrenaline before when you were prepping, not during service, because it would distract you. But I remember there was two identical twins in the kitchen. And every night after service, we used to practice dancing on the wet floor. I swear to God. We'd do the funky chicken. We wouldn't do the caterpillar. We'd done different things. So when the restroom was quiet, we used to finish maybe about 10:30, 11, go into a nightclub called Mirage. And for the last hour, I used to go up to Dublin, buy vinyl. My first record was Felix, Don't You Want My Love?
Yeah.
And that was in Temple Bar in Abbey Discs. And I loved DJing. And I didn't get paid, by the way. I went and just had the banter and went out on stage and was dancing in between and different things. Good times.
We're talking to Neville McGuire about the soundtrack to his life. What's your memory of what song did you like to play back in the day?
Wow, there was lots of them. There was so many of them. Bit of trance, bit of R&B, bit of kind of
dance anything
music.
That was going.
Anything that was kind of popular and in at the time. A lot of it was on vinyl, so it might hadn't been always in the charts, right. But it was good stuff.
Lovely to hear Nevin. Wishing Nevin and gang a very happy new year from all of us at Daisy Cottage Farm, and really great. Enjoy the show. A few years ago, we had a beautiful meal in Nevin's restaurant. It was very special, and they're the cool Swan people. Oh, these are all your customers and your suppliers. Nevin is the most welcoming and generous host in Ireland, and his parents were privileged to know his family and Imelda, our lovely family, and Nevin loves to share his genuine enthusiasm for good food. Black Line and Fermanagh, the Cavan Boran Marble Arch Caves are a hidden gem in Ireland, and add that to the visit as in McNeans.
Yeah, it's great.
Therese Davy. Great to hear Nevin on with you. We've met him in many events we worked on, and he's always been very friendly and kind. Best wishes. That's the Willoughby brothers.
Oh, lovely.
And I always... I was always pissed off that the A-team never shot anyone. High testosterone, wild Jimmy of Outer Offaly. Nobody was ever killed, were they?
Nobody was ever killed. No, that's true. It's too early in the evening.
They'd go in with a transit van, go out with a tank.
There'd
be people flying everywhere, but nobody ever died, mm-hmm. which is brilliant. Nevin's going to stay with us. We take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Nevin is still here. Everybody should do the home economics, social and scientific, covers all the basics of life. And met Nevin with my twins. He was with his twin and his twins last year in Portugal. He was an absolute gentleman. That's Tom,
nice.
Mary, Maya and Alana.
I love it.
So, yeah.
Lovely feedback. Thank you all.
And is there any twins on Imelda's side of the family?
No.
No.
Not at all.
No.
She's an only child, so yeah, none at all. Yeah. Because so my older brother, Kenneth, who we spent about, who plays the drums,
yes.
He has twins.
Right.
Me and David are twins, and then we have twins.
You twins.
Side. Yeah, yeah. So there's something in that cabin water.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is. They're
six now in a few weeks.
Six?
Yeah, so happy birthday to them both.
I'm sort of sprinting ahead, but they'll be worried about, or not worried about, they'll be thinking about having twins as well when that time comes around. That's a long way ahead.
He's God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned your Manchester United and your favourite footballer of all time.
Wow, I've had lots for Man United, but there's always been a great Irish connection. I think Paul McGrath was absolutely awesome. Kevin Moore, and they're great.
Yeah.
Two great athletes, pros.
Yeah.
I think money has ruined football and soccer. I think so. I think, you know, it's just...
One of the guys is on $500,000 a week now. And how much did they play for your
it's
man?
Just sinful. It's
went
just
from
Sanchez,
Liverpool.
Is it?
Coutinho.
Coutinho, yeah.
How much did they pay for
I wouldn't know. I don't follow Liverpool, so I can't answer that. I'll ask my twin brother.
$170 million.
Isn't that incredible?
Tell me, $170 million.
Incredible.
Mad money.
But like, you know, Man United, I've just always really been fascinated with them. And Alex Ferguson, what a manager. Yeah. What a great guy.
Paul McGrath. I'm with you on that one. Probably one of the greatest players we've produced as a country.
For sure.
Probably one of the greatest players ever.
Yeah.
And that performance of his for Ireland against Italy in the Giant Stadium back in 1994. Here's just
unreal. A
brief reminder of that.
And in goes Roberto Baggio. McGrath's head got there. Dino Baggio once more. Again it's McGrath. Baggio on for Signori. It's Signori against McGrath. And McGrath got there ahead of him.
It was amazing.
Don't make fun of that anymore.
That game.
He's fantastic.
Houghton scored, and then we defended and defended and defended, mainly through Paul McGrath.
What a result.
Yeah, brilliant result.
Just wore his heart in his sleeve and just a great pro and just, yeah, fantastic. Fantastic man.
Who do you admire in Irish public life?
Wow. In Irish public life?
Politicians.
Politicians. I'll tell you who I really, really, really love and respect is Michael D. Higgins, our president. I think he's a fantastic man. Any time he meets me and all the people he meets, first thing he asks is, how is Conor, Lucy and Imelda? That's incredible. And all the people he meets. I think he's a brilliant ambassador for our country. And I've heard him talk and he just would just inspire you. And he's so into the whole, you know, goodness and growing and good health. And, you know, I know he'd be into kids, all kids cooking and that. I think he's an amazing man. I think he's an absolute gentleman.
Yeah.
A beautiful person, a great ambassador for our country. And I'm lucky to have met him many times. I think they're just a lovely couple.
Has he ever eaten in the restaurant?
Yes, he had a bowl of soup.
Right.
That's all he had—a bowl of soup. He was passing by, I think, when he was canvassing for the presidency, and he called in and he said, "I admire what you're doing in Black Lion." And he didn't want a meal. I wanted to give him whatever. I met him. I give him a book, and then he posted me one of his books. I don't think he gets time to cook, but what a beautiful man! He had a bowl of soup and brown bread, and then moved on.
And he had Leo in there recently.
Yeah, he's been down, and he was. We were talking about Brexit because interesting. You were talking about it.
Yes, because you were right on the border.
Yeah.
There.
Oh my God! Like before Christmas, you would have asked me before the kind of finalised that there's not going to be a hard border and all that. We were all kind of worried. So I think it's going to pan out okay. Hopefully with the whole trade agreements, that'll be okay. Who knows? I think it's one big mess.
And what would the percentage of your clientele?
It's probably grown over the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years. If you were to ask me maybe 10 years ago, we weren't that well known, say in Belfast, like Inniskillen, as I say, is up the road. That's growing an awful lot. Like, I had two people from Belfast last night, people from all over the country come down to usually stay and eat or stay locally, whatever like that. Probably about 20%, maybe 15%.
From the north?
Yeah, I would think
the
so. Maybe 30. It's a good question. Yeah. A lot from the west, a lot from Dublin mainly. Dublin's number one and Cork's number two.
Okay, incredible. Final question then for you. Who's been the most famous person who's eaten in the restaurant?
My God, yourself.
that's not true. Well, Leo Varadkar is more famous. We mentioned Leo already.
Mary McAleese. Mary McAleese, she's absolutely beautiful woman.
And is she really a regular? Does she return?
Not a regular. No. She's probably been maybe 3 or 4 times.
All right.
And over the years, my mum got to meet her, bless her, and my sister, all the family. Yeah, she's a genuine, special woman. I sat down with her and chatted, and just good people. You know, we've had lots of...
You obviously think about your mum a lot, because I know you were very close to her, and after a good night in the restaurant, do you think she'd be proud of me, or what are your thoughts?
You know, we've been closed for 2 weeks and we reopened just literally last night, and you know, I just you always think of your parents, because I remember the time when there was only 6 people eating in the restaurant. Last night we had 66.
Yeah.
So the staff wouldn't remember that, and I just said to Mel that, you know, Mum and Dad would be very proud of it, because they started it from nothing, and we got to nurture that, we got to enjoy that, and we got to do it right. Too many chefs want to open up a lot of different restaurants. I couldn't be bothered with all that. Yeah. Do want to do it right and enjoy what you do. I think that's the key. I got my love of food from my mum. I got my love. I always wanted to be a chef, and it's from her, and I'll never forget it.
Nevin, been a real pleasure.
Good, gentleman. Good to see you.
Mind yourself on the way back up to Black Line.
Thanks for all the lovely comments from your listeners. Fair play. Thank you.
Everybody should. I've read one more. We'll give you one more. My daughter Sarah, home from Toronto with her partner Preston, dined in McNean House over Christmas. Best dining experience ever, they said. Nevin came and spoke to everyone and presented Sarah with a signed copy of his new book, Super Guy, Superb Food and Beautiful Setting and Everything Irish. Well done to all. Wow. Thank you. And
I love it. Thank you so much.
Can't do better than that.
Thank you. God bless.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.